Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Lodestar podcast news in brief. We're going to be recapping all the main events from last week's supply chain news. I do just want to say, please don't rely on this for any concrete information, because as you all know, everything is subject to change and we can't change a podcast once it's been published in the same way that we can for articles. So just to clarify, this is the news as it ended last week on Friday. And I wouldn't be surprised if everyone is starting this week in neck braces, because I think everyone got whiplash last week. So I'm just going to do a quick recap of it. Reciprocal tariffs were suspended for a 90-day period. And during this time, it will be a blanket 10% everywhere, unless you're in Canada or Mexico, in which case it's 25%, or China, but I will get onto that. Trump explained that this was because all these countries had tried to negotiate a solution and not retaliated in any way. Of course, the only country that did retaliate was China, who immediately came back with 34% on US imports and a restriction on critical minerals. After China's response, the US added 50% additional tariffs to make China's exports to the US subject to 104% duty. Then China upped their tariff on the US to 84%, likewise adding another 50%. Then the US came back with 125% tariffs on China, plus the 20% tariff to stop fentanyl, makes that 145%. And then China finally came back with 125% tariffs on US goods and said that that was their final figure. So this all happened in like 2 days, very, very fast paced. If you want a good drinking game, take a shot every time I just said tariff. This flip-flopping again caused shippers and forwarders and indeed media lots and lots of stress. But those moving cargo had to make a decision on whether to rush to get goods in before tariffs get higher or to halt shipments and wait until Trump might change his mind and reduce tariffs. We did see a brief halt in shipments. Notably, Jaguar Land Rover in the UK put an immediate halt on US-bound shipments. Lots were adopting different short-term mitigation tactics, but were finding it like near impossible to draw up long-term plans. Then once the reciprocal tariffs were announced to have been reduced, we had forwarder reports that shippers in Asia were looking for space, but not from China, from South Korea and Taiwan. Others said that warehouse space in China was very limited. So presumably while those US-bound goods are held as part of this wait and see strategy. Alex, you had some good anecdotes as well, didn't you, from forwarders on the ground?
A lot of interesting stuff last week. A Chinese forwarder who had just learned about China's 125% tariff on the US said, which I really enjoyed, he said, "There's nothing anyone can do, Alex. We should just all relax." So that's my favourite saying from last week. Flexport said that about one third of its customers had paused shipments. I also heard from a Chinese forwarder on Friday who had saved his customer more than $200,000 by importing a shipment of papier-mâché animals, which were made in Las Vegas and being sent to a firework festival in Beijing. He said they'd booked the carrier within seconds of the Chinese tariff announcement, and he said it was stunning work from his team. So that was a really nice little happy news story in amongst all the challenges.
Papier-mâché animals. Interesting. Okay, so that's how shippers reacted, but how did carriers respond? First on the ocean side, Gav.
Well, Drury recorded 83 announced blank sailings for the next 4 weeks on the East-West trades. And that's 12% of the total pro forma sailings that were initially due to take place. And of that, 53% are likely to take place on the Trans-Pacific eastbound, around 29% on Asia-Europe trades, and then 18% on the transatlantic westbound trade. This is roughly double the amount of blanks that took place in the previous four-week period, so they're certainly on the increase. I think shippers should be prepared that for blank sailings to be announced at very short notice, given the uncertainty around the tariff.
And what about in air, Alex?
Well, we've heard that Amazon has started cancelling orders and that, in fact, because of all the front loading to avoid tariffs, there's overstocking in the market and volumes are down. But in air freight, rates have actually held, even though volumes are down. We did have a tip that some airlines have cancelled flights out of Asia, but we couldn't actually confirm this, so I'm not sure that that's the case. I also did an interview with Nick Diesel, who's head of Virgin Atlantic Cargo. We'll have more on that this week. But it's been a difficult time for the cargo arms of airlines. Freighter operators can follow the money, they can adapt quickly and change destinations, but passenger carriers really can't. He said bookings are up to 18 months out, so there's not much they can do about it. He said it's been a surprisingly strong start to the year, but that Virgin is obviously heavy exposed to the US market. It makes up about 70% of its destinations. But it has done a deal with WestJet in Canada, which is buying space from Virgin, and it's expanded its presence in India. So there are some potentially good routes for it. But overall, he said that the airline really needs to focus on what is within its control. And I think what he really meant by that was exceptional customer service. Anyway, come to thelodestar.com for more on Virgin this week.
The US also announced stricter measures as part of its de minimis exemption changes. It was initially that from the 2nd of May, low-value shipments going via post, so that's mostly used by smaller e-commerce platforms and individuals who can't access bulk transport, would be subject to a $50 fee. That went up to $75 and it's now at $100. Then from the 1st of June, this was set to go to $100, then $150, but now it is $200. Air, cargo, express or maritime-based low-value shipments will be subject to a duty of 120% worth of its value. This is obviously set to significantly reduce demand as prices get a lot higher for the consumer, which presumably will give some relief to that aircraft capacity worry that everyone had this time last year. So we're likely to see lots of network changes from carriers. Gav, I also believe there was some movement on this looming 301 rule that proposed fees for China-built vessels making US port calls. What's the latest, Gav?
Well, to quote the UK's ex-Prime Minister Gordon Brown, there is cautious optimism, at the least, that the government isn't going to rush this one through. I mean, reading between the lines, if that's possible with this administration, there is a suggestion that it has taken some of the feedback from the US trade representative hearings that took place at the end of March, which was almost unanimous in its opposition to the $1.5 million per port call fee. So in the Restoring America's Maritime Dominance Executive Order, there was mention made of the 301 action. And it said that the US trade representative would continue collecting information and liaising with other agencies, blah, 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 blah. Much the sound of a can being kicked down the road, which is thankful, because one thing that isn't in question is that carriers and their customers all thought it was a monumentally dumb idea. And they were really worried that it would come to pass. And it still might come to pass, but the sounds coming from Washington are that they have taken on some of the opposition. I must say one thing, actually, Charlotte. The Israeli carrier Zim signed an order for 11,000 LNG fueled ships. So 10 ships, they're on long-term charter. The order's been placed by two ship owners, and then they'll be put on lease, effectively, to Zim over probably about 10 years. The really interesting thing here is that all 10 of those ships will be built in China. And, you know, Zim it's an Israeli shipping line, but a lot of its business is focused on the US. It's listed on the NASDAQ stock exchange. Clearly, they don't think this 301 thing is actually going to come into effect. Or they think that by the time these vessels are delivered, which is in 26 and 27, according to the current construction schedule, they don't think it's going to be a problem. Or they've discovered some other trade that they're going to deploy these on.
Very interesting indeed.
Yeah.
We also reported that India had withdrawn Bangladesh's access to its transshipment, leaving the country with a loss of road air exports via land borders. So on the 8th of April, India's Ministry of Finance confirmed that it had rescinded access to transshipment for export cargo from Bangladesh destined to third countries through land custom stations to Indian ports and airports. An explanation wasn't given as to why, but a report by Reuters suggests it was down to delays and higher costs hitting Indian export opportunities. Obviously, a huge chunk of Bangladesh's volume used to move via India, and the space was very limited by air straight from Dhaka. So, Alex, how will this impact the air freight market here?
Yeah, this story made me think two things, really. One was that there is the world outside Trump, which is really nice. But the other was, it seems a bit harsh for India to do this to Bangladesh at a time when they were facing quite high tariffs from the US. But nevertheless, air freight rates out of Dhaka are expected to surge because of this banning on transshipment access for Bangladeshi exports. And one Dhaka-based forwarder told the Lodestar that the short-term outlook is pretty gloomy. He said, if the airlines cannot increase the capacity from Bangladesh, the impact will be very bad. the airlines are increasing rates abnormally, and we'll see demand in the ad hoc charter space also spike upwards. So not good news for Bangladesh's exporters, as ever, to be honest.
Now, from tariffs to another running theme of last week, and that was updates to a few acquisitions that we've been monitoring. Let's start with DSB and its takeover of DB Schenker. What happened here, Alex?
Well, the EU has now approved the deal, so it's only the US Department of Justice which still needs to approve it. But most people think there won't be a problem with antitrust in the US because it's not big enough in the US to be of issue. However, our great news editor, who, by the way, is also confusingly called Alex, for anyone who's been confused while writing to us both, he wrote an article on Friday suggesting that there could be some challenges for the merger, with customers expected to vote with their feet. One source told us that the new merger could end in complete disaster on the ocean in particular. Carriers have stopped sort of caring about smaller forwarders, but in periods of low demand, they actually prefer them over larger customers who pay less. And obviously it helps with the demand. Another source said that the merger would have a big impact on European road freight. And they also said that a number of customers have said that they wouldn't work with DSV or that they wouldn't work with Schenker. And so really, we're not going to work with either under a combined entity. But DSV has always admitted that it initially expects to lose customers, and normally these integrations go pretty smoothly, but it's definitely one to watch.
And Gav, now over to you. And there are a few that you've been looking at. We've got GXO's takeover of Wincanton to start. What happened there?
In a nutshell, the UK Monopolies Regulator, which is called the Competition and Markets Authority, the CMA, had a series of responses to its request to comment from both other 3PLs and GXO Wincanton customers. Basically, the CMA thinks there's going to be a substantial lessening of competition in one particular sector, and that is the UK supermarket sector. At the moment, supermarkets basically have four choices for their logistics. They either go to GXO, or they go to Wincanton, or they go to DHL, or they go in-house. That is the reality of the UK market. That's all they've got. So when GXO and Wincanton combine, you can obviously see that there might be competition issues. I've been through all the responses to the remedy proposals. No one likes them. The competitors don't like them. The customers don't like them. And as a result of that, the CMA and GXO have held further meetings. And I believe that GXO has offered to amend some of these remedies or even possibly come up with the third. These talks are obviously behind closed doors. But what we do know is that the initial deadline of the end of April has been pushed back to the end of June. That's when we should finally get a ruling on this acquisition.
There was also something that came up to do with Panama Ports Company and its owner Hutchison, which, as we have just seen, has been acquired by MSC and BlackRock. What happened, and will this impact the sale, perhaps?
Well, easy then, trigger finger. Hutch hasn't been acquired just yet. There's still a lot of due diligence to be done, and another 130-odd days of negotiations. In the original sale deal, and this is the whole of Hutch to BlackRock and MSC, the Panama Ports Company, PPC, component of it was carved out because Panama was doing an audit of PPC's contract. At the beginning of last week, it was announced that Panama's Comptroller General believed that Panama Ports Company basically owed the country $1.2 to $1.3 billion in tax. Hutch has said this is nonsense, that it invested over that amount in the ports and additionally paid the country hundreds of millions of dollars in dividends. The state owns, I think, a 10% stake in the PPC. I don't know where this goes from Panama. This is very much now in the hands of the lawyers. As for what impact it might have on the rest of the sale, BlackRock CEO Larry Fink was speaking at a conference in New York last week, and he said that Panama accounts for about 4% of Hutch's global port throughput. I mean, while I'm sure they would love to have Panama as part of the deal, there are still another 42 ports and 50-odd million TEU of volumes in the rest of the business. So you would assume on that basis that the overall sale will go through if they could agree terms. Although it would be very interesting that if it didn't because of Panama, then that would suggest that there was a far greater sort of geopolitical dimension to this deal than we've sort of previously reported.
And finally, in our M&A segment, a bit of movement to do with HMM, which in December 2023, a consortium comprising of Harem Group and private equity JKL Partners was named the preferred buyer for HMM, but differences over the selling price and management rights eventually stopped the sale. There was an update last week that the South Korean state could increase its stake in HMM to 72% as the carrier will repay all outstanding convertible bonds held by the Korea Development Bank and Korea Ocean Business Corp. And an HMM spokesperson did tell the Lodestar that the decision whether to convert the bonds into shares is at the discretion of the Korea Development Bank and Korea Ocean Business Corp. HMM came under state control in 2016 after its lenders, led by the Korea Development Bank, swapped debt for equity to save the company from bankruptcy. The estimates are that a 72% stake in HMM could be worth $7.4 billion and that this huge amount could further impede any attempts to find a new owner for the company. Plus, the state's growing interest in HMM could discourage any buyer from committing.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, Charlotte, is that in 2016, the other major South Korean shipping line, Hanjin, which at the time was way bigger than HMM, went bankrupt and caused an absolute shit show in the industry. And it was really important for Korea. You know, they need a shipping line for their exporters. So I think this looks to me like it's just using, it's going to keep control of HMM because it's so strategically important to the country.
An interesting one to watch, for sure.
Definitely.
So a very crazy week last week, lots and lots of moving parts. How have freight rates responded, starting with air, please, Alex?
Well, as you know, I don't really like listing off loads of numbers, but I think the most interesting part of the picture right now is rates from the US to China, which normally no one really takes much notice of, because they languish at about half a dollar per kilo, possibly up to 80 cents per kilo. But a contact in Shanghai told us that in the rush to get goods into China before China imposed its US tariffs, have meant that prices have now gone up to $2 per kilo initially. And then by the end of last week, he was being quoted $5 per kilo and then $11 per kilo, which is astonishing from the US to China. World ACD said that rates had more or less held, globally speaking, but volumes were down. And then, of course, you've got the de minimis exemption ending in May. So it is expected that rates into the US will hold firm until then, if not go up. But then after that, according to Flexport CEO Ryan Peterson, air freight rates will likely plummet, he said. So there's that to look forward to for shippers who, quite frankly, need a bit of a break.
And how does this compare with ocean freight rates, Gav?
Oh, it was slightly up on the week before. Small single-digit numbers on Trans-Pacific and Asia-Europe trades. All the tariff rubbish happened on the Wednesday, which was probably too late to really have a major impact on last week's rate levels. I think the interesting thing, really, there'll be two things. One, we're going to have to really watch what happens to the rates over the next few weeks, because that will probably be a much better indicator of how the spot market is being impacted by the tariff announcements. The second thing is, from my sources, is that a lot of Trans-Pacific shippers who write at the moment, of course, a lot of these guys are involved in their long-term annual rate negotiations with carriers. From what I'm hearing is that a lot less volume in 2025 will be moving under contract. People don't want to sign when you've got a nutter going around tearing up every international agreement, right? And so a lot more shippers will be putting a lot more of their cargo onto the spot market. So I had, you know, in a year, a Trans-Pacific shipper might move 80% under contract and leave 20% for the spot market to see if they could win a few margin points and so on. This year, people are talking about going to 60-40 or even 50-50. There's going to be far more cargo moving under spot on the Trans-Pacific. I mean, that might be a win or a loss for carriers or for shippers. Who knows? We will see.
Now we have gone through all the main points from last week, here is what you might see in the news this week. Not going to make any solid predictions because, as everyone knows by now, literally anything could happen. So another game of whack-a-mole this week, I think, each morning waking up like, what's the new tariff rate? What's happened? What's everyone decided? So we'll probably start to see some carriers responding to what shippers are doing with their supply chains. So changing routes, blankings, that kind of thing. Unfortunately, we can likely expect a lot more between USA and China. Hopefully they're able to come to some sort of agreement and not just keep stacking tariffs up to infinity. I have no idea what's going to happen there. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, will be attending IATA's World Cargo Symposium in Dubai from the 15th to the 17th of April. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the reports are from that. And do make sure to go and say hi to Alex if you see him there. Our coverage of all of this is sponsored by Etihad Cargo. The Journal of Commerce have a webinar on Thursday the 17th for those interested in the trucking market. It focuses on getting ready for the upcoming LTL classification changes, so I will be seeing what their experts have to say. More webinars, and there is a Zenitor webinar on Tuesday the 15th of April looking at how to tackle tariffs, trade lane shifts, and cost pressures. I think we need all the help we can get there. I've also got a piece on the relationship between forwarders and large carriers, something on SME forwarders' role in a market increasingly shrouded by consolidation. And Alex Linnane is going to be looking into how the uncertainty is affecting the private equity investment market in the US. Plus, if you celebrate Easter or live in the UK, it's a bank holiday on Friday, so the start of a lovely long weekend, which gives us something to look forward to this week. Hang in there, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you next time.